Episode number 78 of Gary King's Inconvenient Truths, where Gary presents video clips and stories I don't know are coming from my spontaneous and unrehearsed response, where I'm hearing that some have watched all 77 episodes. That blows me away. Gary, what do you got for me today?
I'm loaded for bear, of course. And I just want to point out my little guitar in the back there. My wife bought it for me. It's a Taylor Builder's Edition, and it costs a pretty penny, and I'm more than happy to own it, that's for sure. All right, here we go. We're going to start off with the show back in the 60s, The Week in Space.
And that radio command link. Actually, it's a link along that tether line you see there, 25 feet of umbilical cord. That contains the life support system and communications link from the spacecraft life support system out through that chest pack.
Okay. All right. What do you think about that?
That looks phony as shit to me. That was completely fabricated. And where the hell was the camera located that was shooting it?
I was about to say that.
This is a farce, Gary. This is a complete farce. And even when they had Earth seemingly rotating beneath, it was happening too fast. I mean, this was a bad simulation. I'm kind of blown away. And of course, this is prior to the fake moon landings of 69 through 71. This was in 1966. I think it was priming the pump. So we'd think that whatever we were to see in relation to space would look something like this. Yeah. Not very realistic, Gary. I'm frankly rather appalled.
I know. I guess the true hero was the cameraman going out with no umbilical cord. I have a hard time saying it. But so, yeah.
Well, this was done with animation in a studio, a computer, whatever. I mean, it wasn't real.
Yeah, I mean, they have B movies that look more scientific than that back in the 60s. All right, here's Salente and Napolitano.
Now tomorrow, free speech for me, but not for thee. And you go on talking about what happened with Hamas. And you go, here's the backstory. The Hamas assault on Israeli civilians and military on October 7th prompted a ferocious Israeli response on Palestinian civilians and Hamas fighters, the latter of which have been the subject of intense international debate and even litigation in the International Court of Justice. Both the initial assault and the response in turn have prompted in the U.S. the articulation of deeply held and strongly worded ideas. You go, some folks here believe that the Israeli Defense Force has intentionally engaged in the genocide of Palestinian civilians in order to expand the borders of the current state of Israel, so as to include what is today the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. Some believe that this land was destined by God to be the Israeli homeland. Some believe that the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, has engaged in war crimes, and others believe it is doing what is necessary. This is what you just wrote, is what's going on in Israel in front of everybody's eyes is complete genocide.
Yes. But what I just wrote, you should be able to discuss freely and openly in the United States of America without fear of retribution from the government. I expect that when you and I say it's genocide, and we have very, very sound reasons for believing that, including the International Court and all the evidence they amassed, that people will disagree with us and even call us names. I get it. I get it. That's the way the world is. They have the freedom of speech just as we do. But I do not expect that I will be punished by the government for saying it. Now, I'm a graduate of Princeton University. If I were a student at Princeton or a professor or administrator at Princeton, and I said the Israeli government has engaged in genocide, and this legislation that the House of Representatives just passed, hasn't passed the Senate yet, becomes law, Princeton University has two choices: kick me out or suffer a loss of federal funds. Because the Congress has decided on its own that it will punish speech that it hates and fears. And that is a direct and profound violation of the First Amendment. They debated this on the floor of the House, you're not going to believe this, for 15 minutes. They gave Thomas Massie, the most courageous member of the House, the Ron Paul of our day, 2 minutes, 2 minutes in which to explain how this violates the oath that everybody in that room took to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, which includes the First Amendment. They didn't want to hear it. This thing passed overwhelmingly. There were like 40 or 50 Republicans who voted against it. Some of them had accepted money from AIPAC. AIPAC took all their, not Thomas Massie, but others. AIPAC took all their names down from its website. And by the way, they funded a $2 million anti-Massie campaign in the media in the state of Kentucky. Now, Massie doesn't have to worry about losing his seat. It's a safe seat for him, but they're going to do everything they can to tarnish him and make his life miserable. The House of Representatives chose as a solution to anti-Semitism, authoritarianism.
All right, Dr. Petzman.
Well, I'm a huge fan of Judge Napolitano, who, like Tucker, was kicked off of Fox because he was dealing with too many hard truths, too many inconvenient truths. Like Judge Napolitano, I myself am a graduate of Princeton, and I'm not happy with the situation as it's evolving. This is so very timely because they're talking about the anti-Semitism bill that was passed by the House with an overwhelming majority, 320 votes in support of violating, trashing the First Amendment and violating Americans' freedom of speech on behalf of Israel. Now, Gerald Celente is a worthy guy, but the points the judge was making on this occasion were extraordinarily telling. And if this passes the United States Senate, America conceptually no longer exists. We may be here as a physical entity, but the heart and core of American civilization, of American culture, of American life as a constitutional republic is freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom to petition your government for redress of grievances. All that's going to be dead if this law passes. Now, it's clearly unconstitutional, and it will eventually, should it pass, and be signed by the fake Biden, which is a given, make its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. It'll be invalidated. But the problem is all the mischief occurs in the meanwhile. They want to tamp down the criticism of Israel, which is anti-genocide. Not anti-Semitism, anti-genocide, than which nothing could be more appropriate to protest. I mean, student protests on campuses are as American as apple pie, Gary. The only time, however, the press gets involved and wealthy donors put pressure on their institutions and administrations act, and even police are sent in to brutally, violently beat the protesters when it involves Israel. Israel. Voltaire observed, to know who rules over you determine who you're not allowed to criticize. There it is. We knew that Congress was Israeli occupied territory. That vote demonstrates conclusively beyond any doubt that is the fact. And if this also passes the Senate, then run up a revised star and stripe, replace that field of stars with the Israeli flag, because we have become the United States of Israel. This is a profound issue, and the future of the nation hangs in the balance.
Dr. Fetzer, I've known you a long time. I did not know you graduated from Princeton. Awesome. Very impressive.
How worried are you that the UK, where you used to live, that America, that all of the Western nations, we've imported so many of these people with bad ideas, the wrong ideas?
We, as Iranian dissidents, we're supposed to be safe here. We're in this country to enjoy the rights and privileges that are afforded to us, which is the First Amendment, which is freedom of speech. Our rights work, that we have freedom of speech, and those who respond with violence, you arrest them. Now we're living in a world where we can't feel safe to speak because you're letting in the people that will harm us if we speak. And if we try to speak out in the streets, you arrest us and silence us anyway.
Okay, Dr. Fetzer.
Well, of course, that's a perfect illustration of the points I was making. Freedom of speech is very much at stake here right now in the United States. And sad to say, I think we're reaping the consequences of having sent so many of our police forces for training to Israel, where the Israelis treat American police to treat American citizens the way the Israelis treat the Palestinians, which is with brutality. Vicious. What happened now at Columbia, just outrageous. Pressure was put on the mayor to send in the cops, and they beat the hell out of the Columbia students. My heart went out from them, not least of all because I myself had done a year of graduate work at Columbia, earning my PhD. It's an estimable institution. And the students did not deserve this. Profoundly undemocratic, un-American, Israeli all the way. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli PM, has even suggested the U.S. should call out the National Guard to suppress the protesters. Why? Because they're criticizing Israel. Imagine Vladimir Putin had suggested the U.S. call out the National Guard because there were protests against Russia. Or Xi Jinping suggested America should call out the National Guard because soon we're protesting China. Americans would be outraged. They'd be out in the streets. They'd be complaining. They'd be calling to Congress when they're senators. They'd be raising hell. But when Benjamin Netanyahu suggests the same thing, no, it's just taken as a matter of course. Obviously, that's what we ought to be doing, using our National Guard to suppress our students from exercising their First Amendment right to freedom of speech, Gary. This is so disgusting. I'm infuriated.
All right. Next up,
for that, as more electric vehicles come into use, gas tax revenue, which funds road repairs, that is declining. Southern California, so California is going to test a road charge program as a stopgap. The state is recruiting about 800 drivers to participate in a six-month study. It will start next year. Drivers will be required to pay road charges each month based on the number of miles driven. For their participation, California will pay each person about $400 in gift cards. They will also get a gas tax refund at the end of the pilot program. You can sign up at caroadcharge.com.
Okay. Well, the whole EV thing has been a catastrophe. The industry's abandoning the EVs. Hybrids, I think, are just fine. Hybrids make a difference. Hybrids are intelligent investment. EVs are not. count on California to lead the way toward disaster and calamity. Gavin Newsom, whom I've been anticipating, will be the Democrat nominee. Biden ain't going to be on the ticket, I guarantee. But he's created one catastrophe after another for California. I mean, the Democrats are up against it. Have no doubt they are going to try to steal the election again because they have no choice. Otherwise, they're going to be wiped off the map, which they deserve. Their policies, pro-war, pro-immigration, pro-criminal, non-enforcement of laws, pro-shoplifting, pro-tranny, pro-teaching kids sex at an age when they're too young to comprehend. This is all disgusting. This is all repulsive in the extreme. The Democrat Party of today deserves to be wiped off the map. And let it happen. Devoutly to be wished.
Well said. All right, Zuckerberg is one of the biggest proponents of climate change. And here's his new yacht. Pretty nice boat there.
Larger than Coast Guard ships, many U.S. Navy vessels are smaller. I mean, yeah, the hypocrisy of a guy who's incredibly rich, but who's investing in a monster power consumer. But of course, the whole climate change thing is a fraud. The amount of CO2 in the atmosphere has nothing to do with the temperature of Earth. We know that from over 600 million years of recorded history. And if there's no correlation, if they're completely independent, then obviously there can be no causal connection. In fact, it turns out CO2 is nigh indispensable to life, involved in the production of water and air, but also has cooling effects on Earth in three or four different dimensions. The whole thing's a scam. You can have the world's biggest yacht as far as I care. But the fact is, climate change is a hoax that threatens to do immense damage to Earth by the genocidal maniacs who want to reduce the Earth's population by as much as 95% so they can continue to rule the world from guess where? Jerusalem. The New World Order is rooted in a theological passages from Isaiah 56 to 66, the whole Zionist enterprise, where all the nations of the world are to bring their wealth to Zion. All the kings of the world are to bow down to Zion or lose their heads. Yes, they're tied together. This is a monstrous Zionist scam to rule the world. Just let that sink in.
We don't usually look at Aaron Rodgers as a truth teller, but here's an exception.
Very few players in the NFL dared to speak out against their draconian measures, and now Aaron on Tucker is sharing some of the inside secrets. You know, the entire mainstream media went after him like Jimmy Kimmel for just saying what most of us agree with.
You know, there was a great mashup that Rogan talked about a few times where it was all these different shows and it said, brought to you by Pfizer. Yeah. Anderson Cooper, brought to you by Pfizer.
It's an amazing.
I think you have to realize that it's all about the money. And as you get into this, you read Bobby's book about the real Anthony Fauci, you realize if you want to know what's really going on, not just in big pharma, but in government, is follow the money. even in the NFL. I mean, there was a strong push. They sent stooges out to every team to try and enforce a vaccination level above 90% on every team with zero exemption, with zero informed consent. Just get this so that we look good, because big pharma ad spend is humongous, not just on the late night shows, influences Hollywood, the NFL.
Leave a like in this video and subscribe or follow for more daily news.
Okay.
Well, I'll just tell you, I've been a big fan of Aaron Rodgers forever. Look at the intelligence he displays. Look at the discernment. Look at how articulate he is about real, real issues. My understanding, Aaron declined to take the vax. And of course, it's a good thing. Stu Peters has shown and has died suddenly. World-class soccer players dropping dead on the field. Football players. Baseball, too, no doubt. I mean, worldwide, it's a phenomenon because of the vax. And, of course, you have morticians, embalmers in the UK saying, you get these long, fibrous blood clots made up of material they've never seen before. And, of course, they're constricting the arteries. Once you get that cessation of blood to your heart, you're dead. So, Aaron, in my opinion, is a heroic figure because he, of course, has run the risk of being demonized, ridiculed for speaking truths. And in this case, of course, he had an enormous audience because these shows, Tucker, does get viewership up to 60 million. 60 million, Gary. I'm a huge fan of them both. What a great combination, a real dynamic duo. Thanks for that.
Okay. This is to do with Russia. All right, 1 second. Here we go. Sorry for the delay.
The man expected to be Russia's new defense minister has been setting out his stall. Andrei Belousov has been addressing the Federation Council on what he sees as the key tasks ahead.
Third issue is already systemic in nature. We're talking about the recruitment of the armed forces. I specifically want to emphasize to journalists that we're not talking about mobilization or any emergency measures. We're talking about planned measures, but nevertheless, the process has already been launched. A special military operation is underway, and there are pressing issues related to it. First of all, the issues are related to equipping the current group, ensuring the supply of the most modern military and special equipment, artillery ammunition, missiles, personal protective equipment for military personnel, communications equipment, drones, electronic warfare, and so on.
That is an important speech from the new proposed defense minister, Andrei Belousov. He essentially laid out his proposal for the Ministry of Defense and outlined the priority tasks for the ministry. Now, he did say that it's quite important to develop new methods of combat operations. He talked about how it is necessary to provide all important and necessary weapons as well as equipment to the northern military district. He says that it is essential to stay up to date with the new technologies, as the other side is learning in that field quite quickly. Now, he did talk about how under the acting defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, a new and a modern armed forces was created. But nonetheless, it seems that for Andrei Belousov, it is key to integrate the economy of the armed forces with the general economy as a whole.
President of the Russian Federation has placed great trust in me. I would like to focus on two key tasks that were set for me by the president. The first is to ensure the full integration of the economy of the armed forces into general economy of the country, taking into account the objective growth of defense spending. This is a difficult and complex task, which primarily involves optimizing military spending. Everything that is effective and advanced in the country should work to achieve victory, to ensure that the task of the armed forces are solved.
He also pointed out that there's a lot of work to be done when it comes to improving the welfare of the military personnel, especially the ones in the battlefield. Now, he says that includes providing housing as well as provision of medical services and essentially easier access to military benefits for them. Now, he does say in general that it seems that he believes that the soldiers deserve better social care, as well as not to overlook the economy in the defense ministry. And overall, he did mention other changes when it comes to the armed forces.
Okay.
Well, look at the intelligence of Vladimir Putin. By putting, yes, he's our close friend, an economist, man of broad comprehension of Russian history, relation to Ukraine, the integral relationship between military expenditures and the national economy. And in the United States, things are wildly out of whack. We spend untold billions on the military, and we get practically nothing, substandard equipment. The necessity for maintenance contracts that bring about more profits for the industry than their original contracts. We violate civilian oversight by promoting generals to the level of Secretary of Defense, leaving only the president for civilian oversight. Vladimir Putin has evaded those problems. You get a man like Lloyd Austin, and he's going to try to give his buddies everything they could possibly want, like a wish list. He, as Secretary of Defense, is going to promote. Now, you want this new plane, you want that new carrier, whatever, that new submarine. Regardless of the cause, he's going to promote it. He's a moron when you come right down to it. Now, Vladimir Putin has very wisely installed an economist. I mean, he realizes this war business with the West, because it's led by a group of lunkheads who have no understanding of the situation they're in, who think they could prevail militarily even when the war is already lost, when they, like the United States, continue to send billions to Ukraine, which is going into the pockets of Ukrainian oligarchs. Julian Assange, over a decade ago, predicted the West was going to create a new class of billionaires in Ukraine, and that's exactly what we have done. I have reported on this appointment by Putin, and this is a very savvy guy with profound understanding. And he actually shares Putin's views that Russia can preserve Western cultural values, especially those rooted in Christianity, the very values the West itself has abandoned. And I believe they've got it right. Russia is going to have a better balance of relationship between religion, politics, and society than we have here in the West, where everything has disintegrated. It's been corroded by a woke ideology that has pervaded and damaged virtually every aspect of normal life, including right here in the United States. So, Gary, I'm really impressed you included that clip. It wasn't an obvious choice, but it was an extremely appropriate one. Thank you for that as well.
All right. Well, I have to admit, I listened to your other shows and I knew you covered it, so I went and found it. So I do have a clue sometimes. So, all right. Now, just to lower our blood pressure a little bit, I'm going to go ahead and include this. Now, Marvin Hagler was one of the very first people to go down after taking the COVID shot. So I wanted to play it, the clip before, but I couldn't find it in time.
That's what I feel. War. That's what's on my mind.
Middleweight champion of the world,
it's such a shame that he went down with the COVID vax.
Wasn't Hagler a welterweight or a light heavyweight? He was
middleweight, I believe. Middleweight.
Middleweight, yeah. Well, that a magnificent physical specimen like Marvin Hagler would succumb to the vax is no surprise when you have your arteries plugged by these long fibrous entities. Even someone like him, as great shape as he was, cannot endure. And we're having this happening a lot. Again, I say, go back, watch Stu Peters died suddenly. You'll get the idea of what's happened here. And they want to continue to spread it. They like what they've done. It's an effective weapon if you want to kill human beings. And do it under the guise of protecting their health. I mean, how ironic is that? It even turns out Pfizer didn't give the same shot to their own employees, and we haven't heard of a single Pfizer employee who succumbed to the jab because they weren't given the same one. And I believe it was a head of Pfizer who was embarrassed when he was traveling to Israel, where he had to be vaccinated, had to sheepishly admit he'd never been vaccinated. He knew better. What did he know, Gary, that we didn't know? So you have the protected having to be protected from the unprotected by being given the protection that didn't protect the protected. It's all just as absurd as it gets. But as Aaron was observing, big bucks. They're making fabulous sums of money out of killing people on purpose. Just a disgrace. Just disgusting. Utterly repulsive, Gary, and that's where we are. The CDC, the FDA, the NIH, none of them raised their least digit to save the American people from a death jab. How bad is that?
I agree. Okay, our Pete Maravich got some good reviews last week, so I have a super sports one for you next week. All right, here we go. In New Zealand and Australia, they're ordering these beekeepers to burn all of their hives.
I'm Stephen Brown from Springbank Honey. We've come to you live from our honey shed in New Zealand. We've been ordered by the management agency to destroy all our boxes. Most of them are off the hives for winter, and they found two swabs with AFB out of six swabs throughout our area. And now they want us to destroy all the hives. We have $2 million of boxes, and if I don't destroy them, they're going to either prosecute me. They're coming on Monday. It's 2 days away, so we're going to work the weekend and now burn $2 million worth of boxes. Can you please help me?
Hey everybody, some more really disturbing news as far as bee colonies being forcibly destroyed by governments. Previously we covered in Australia. The New South Wales government was going around using the Biosecurity Emergency Declaration, saying there was an outbreak of varroa mite, a type of parasite. We then saw the Australian government use an extremely toxic poison called fipronil, a possible human carcinogen, which causes death in animals at very small dosages, and they would just put out baited traps for the wildlife to get into, to kill all the pollinating insects. But the beekeepers who were told to destroy their bees cried foul and said the government has not proven anything to us. And as an outside observer, we've seen the government do absurd things, evil things, and they could be working backwards from wanting to destroy the bees and invoking biosecurity law to do so. So how do we distinguish between the two? How do we know if there's really a threat or if the threat was manufactured? Well, more crazy bee destruction is going on, this time in New Zealand. And this time they're blaming something called American Foul Brood, or AFB. And they say they have this special test that they can test for the spores of this bacteria. And then they fearmonger about what this bacteria can do. Again, the beekeepers are crying foul, asking the world to help. And I'm no expert on bees, but it sure seems to me that the government has not proven that there's a real threat here. And I can imagine motives for why these governments, New South Wales, Australia, New Zealand, want to destroy the pollinators, want to destroy these huge bee colonies. So here's an update out of New Zealand. I'm not saying that American foul brood isn't a real threat. I'm not sure. But I do see a huge issue with governments unilaterally deciding to kill millions and millions and millions of pollinators without any oversight, without any auditing, without any accountability. And we're seeing this way too often. So is it true that the Australian bees are infected with parasites? Is it true that the New Zealand bees have this bacteria? Or is this a manufactured crisis to kill all the bees? I'll let you decide.
Honey, I'm here. We've had the management agency, the AFB, come through and done five or six tests. Two of them came up as AFB. The ones in the far row and the other shed there didn't have any AFB around the back. But they came up and said they had two tests that came through. One for in this bay that came out, one test, composite test came up as AFB, and one had 2,000 cells and this one as AFB. As you can see, we have thousands of boxes in here. Some of them are brand new, e.g. we've got the brand new foundation that was made in 2022, never been on a beehive, brand new gear. We made it up ready for expanding our hive numbers, but we had a flood. Thanks to QBE, we have yet to receive money for that, so we've yet to expand. But you can see in here, we've got all sorts. That bay here, they said, oh, that one bay's fine. How can that bay be fine, but this one has to be burnt? At the back there, you've got more. There's about another 2,000 or 3,000 brand new boxes in the back there that we have delivered kangaroo boxes from China. As you can see, they're wrapped, labelled where they come from. They come from all different sites. And they check two ones down from some dead out hives, which probably do have a higher level of AFB. We had a lot of beekeepers walk away from their hive near our wintering sites. About 2 years ago, we used to be AFB free. And since then, they...
All right, Dr. Fetcher, go ahead.
A colleague of mine, Miriam Hanane, has a documentary that's received raves about the vanishing bees. For bees pollinate all kinds of fruits, flowers, foods. This is one more dimension of the effort to kill off most of the human race on Earth by destroying an essential element of the complex ecosystem that sustains life. Of course, those claims are fabricated. Of course they're made up. And they claim to be scientific because they have a test. Well, Kerry Mullis, who invented the PCR test, which is just a way of replicating a sample, the PCR will enable you to take a micro sample and multiply it so it's a larger sample for medical and research purposes. It is not itself a research device. It does not test for COVID. It's being abused, it's being adapted, because if you set it at a certain level, you can guarantee false positives. So that's what they've done. This is the same thing. They're playing the same game. They're faking out a scientifically illiterate population to make them think a non-existent threat is real. And they've done it again and again and again. This is simply one more manifestation, Gary. They're playing us for suckers and saps, and they're getting away with it, sad to say.
I can't believe they just walk on your properties, do a few swabs, All right, do you think that parents should be prosecuted for
Did
this?
Did you guys hear about this? Apparently, parents of Michigan school shooter Ethan Crumbly both sentenced to 10 to 15 years for involuntary manslaughter. So my question is this. So you're going to get punished now for what your kids do? So why don't parents just go to jail for any time a kid steals a candy bar or gets in a fight at school? Or anything your kids do, now you got to go to jail for it? Is that how it works? James and Jennifer Crumbly were both convicted of involuntary manslaughter in their son Ethan's deadly shooting at Oxford High School in 2021. The first parents to ever be charged, then convicted in their child's mass shooting at a U.S. school, were both sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison. Their son Ethan, now 17, pleaded guilty as an adult. So he pleaded guilty as an adult. So what do his parents have to do with any of this if he pleads guilty as an adult?
All right, Doug, that's it.
Well, of course. Things absurd on its face. Just ridiculous. Another way of attempting to intimidate parents to be excessively restrictive regarding their children. It's just one more way of disrupting ordinary life in America, Gary. I mean, it's obnoxious. It has no rational foundation. But it's another way of sowing dissension within a society and creating dissent where the need be none. This is a divide and conquer technique to pick one segment of society against another. And they're having tremendous success because our culture is in chaos, Gary, without any doubt. No cohesion whatsoever. And I must say, in my opinion, the left has been so far gone with their woke ideology that it's reached a point of literal clinical insanity. My judgment. The left has gone clinically insane with their woke ideology.
I agree. All right, this girl seems to nail it on feminism.
Feminism is a scam. A few years ago, I was an angry, blue-haired feminist. I once believed that male privilege was real and that I was a victim of the wage gap. Now that I understand the true motives of feminism, I know that this could not be further from the truth and that modern-day feminism is a war on true masculinity. Before women had the right to vote, most were stay-at-home wives, which meant they weren't working jobs and couldn't be taxed. Our overlords didn't like that. Rockefeller started funding feminist campaigns in media, and as a consequence of the movement, women started entering the workforce and leaving the home. Children would then be separated from their parents and sent to Rockefeller-funded schools to be indoctrinated by the state. All of this ultimately disrupting the family unit at its core. Feminism is defined as the belief in social, economic, and political equality of the sexes. But in the West, I must ask, what rights do men have that women don't?
Right.
Well, that was a nice but short clip. I mean... I liked her. I thought everything she said was spot on and very appropriate, Gary, once again. I mean, I think feminism really was an effort to sabotage families in America by generating discontent among women who had heretofore been happy as homemakers, child rearers, family maintainers. That traditional concept of the family was grossly disrupted to contribute to the chaos of contemporary culture. So, spot on, girl.
Yep. That's like a female truther.
When someone tries to make speech illegal, you know what I'm going to do? Is I'm going to do that speech. Because you can go fuck yourselves, that's why. And I would use that speech to point out that Google was founded by three Jewish people. The New York Times was founded and owned by a Jewish family, the Sulzbergers. Instagram and Facebook are obviously both run by Jewish people. David Zaslav is the president and CEO of Warner Bros. Discovery, who is also CNN. He's Jewish. Bob Iger, CEO of Disney. He's Jewish. Just a quick reminder how much Disney owns. We're talking FX, Marvel, ABC, ESPN, National Geographic, Pixar. You know, they even own Star Wars. Brian Roberts, CEO of Comcast. Remember, Comcast owns NBC, MSNBC, all those. He literally goes to Israel every year to compete in the Jewish Olympics, the Maccabiah Games.
Brian Levine is the CEO of Paramount Pictures and Nickelodeon. He's Jewish. The Newhouse family owns Advance Publications. They're Jewish. In case you wanted to know who Advance Publications runs, it's all these magazines. I mean, we can keep going, but honestly, the only two that really stand out are X is owned by Elon Musk. We all know what they tried to do to him. And then we have TikTok. I already made a whole reel, or 10, about how TikTok is actually getting banned for other reasons than China, and how, what's his name? Steve Mnuchin, who is Jewish, is gonna try to buy TikTok with all of his buddies. Like, never mind, I'll just let you go watch that one for yourself. I mean, we can keep going, but so far we've hit all of these companies, so remind me again about the myth of Jews controlling the media, or does this bill outlaw reading too? Because I've just been reading a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, of course, it's no myth. Jews do control the media. I frequently cited having a panel of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen, another panel of 100 executives from NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen, another panel of 100 executives from the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. And would you believe the New York Times is our newspaper of record? What you read in the New York Times passes for the history of the United States. It's a disgrace, Gary. It's a disgrace. Early on, visionary Zionists recognized that controlling the media in America was the key to manipulating public opinion. And they've been astonishingly successful. Only now trying to work our way out of it. Or the alternative media is playing a critical role here for the public to get unfiltered, unbiased information reports so they can have a better sense of what's really going on in the world today. And I'll tell you, it ain't pretty.
All right. There's a new trend. People that are backing Israel and the genocide are being blocked by the younger generation.
Let them eat cake.
A-list celebrities are losing hundreds of followers and counting, with the Block Out 2024 movement gaining steam on social media. A growing group of TikTokers have started collectively blocking celebrities and influencers. The movement's targets are now expanding to include pro-Israel brands and news outlets, believed to be whitewashing Tel Aviv's crimes in the besieged on.
Okay, that's a trend I can get.
Well, in praise of TikTok, it's got nothing to do with TikTok being anti-Jewish or controlled by a Chinese company. It has to do with TikTok revealing too much truth, which is unfavorable to powerful forces, including, of course, Israel. I mean, it goes back to the idea, what could be more warranted or justified than protesting genocide? Would you believe the Israelis claim they can't be committing genocide because it was only one genocide, the Holocaust, which, of course, is mythology. I've done the research. Turns out the International Committee of the Red Cross was keeping copious records on the age, the sex, the ethnicity, the religion, the cause of death of everyone who died in all the camps combined. In 1993, Gary, they did a recalibration. The total dead from all causes, 296,081, none of whom died from being put to death in a gas chamber, because there were none. Back in 1988, Fred Lochter was the leading expert on gas chambers in the United States, traveled to the camps and investigated and found There were no facilities that could possibly observe the function of a gas chamber, which he came back and reported during the trial of Ernst Zendel, a great Canadian who'd been an outspoken Holocaust denier. Well, I'll tell you, if you've done the research, you're either a Holocaust denier or a big fat liar. And it turns out there's a superabundance of the latter. But the world is gradually gravitating toward the former. Check it out. My piece, A Short Take, the Holocaust Narrative, Politics, Trump, Science, on thegovernmentrag.com. Or go to my blog, jameshfetzer.org. Check out the 65 shows. And if you scroll down to the World War II narrative, historical fact or mass illusion, you get a copiously documented expose that the whole thing was a sham. There are, for example, 236 references to 6 million Jews in dire straits or fear of loss of their lives in the international press beginning in 1890. All prior to the Nuremberg tribunals, where the very number has theological origin in a disputed passage of Leviticus, interpreted to mean the chosen people can return to the promised land only when there are minus 6 million who have been consumed in the flames. But even that required interpolation because there was no word in the original Hebrew for 6 million. It's all a monstrous hoax, a gigantic lie, and it's all promoted and defended because Jewish political power is rooted in a Western sense of guilt over the Holocaust, so that they defend it ferociously. But now and then there's a slip. Amy Goodman, decades ago, interviewed a former Israeli Minister of Education, and when Amy brought up criticism of Israel, she, the former Israeli Minister of Education, said, oh, it's a trick. When criticism of Israel arises in Europe, we bring up the Holocaust. When it occurs in America, anti-Semitism, we do it all the time. And it continues to this very day.
All right, here's our final clip. This is 6 minutes, and we'll call it a show.
The real threat to democracy is from the elites. Now, don't get me wrong. We need elites. If President Biden has shown us anything, we need someone to run the countries. When the president has severe dementia, it's not just America that crumbles. The whole world burns. But let's examine the elites. European corporations spend over 1 billion euros a year lobbying Brussels. US corporations spend over $2 billion a year lobbying in DC. Two-thirds of Congress receive funding from pharmaceutical companies. Pfizer alone spent $11 million in 2021. They made over $10 billion in profit. No wonder then that 66% of Americans think the economy is rigged against them for the rich and the powerful. And by the way, we used to have a word for when big business and big government were in cahoots. And I think any students here of early 20th century Italian history know what I'm talking about. What about big tech? Throughout the pandemic, Biden's team, the FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security colluded with big tech in censoring dissenting voices, not kooky conspiracy theorists. People like Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, the Stanford epidemiologist. People like Harvard scientist Martin Kulldorff. People spreading true information, not misinformation, true information at odds with the government narrative. Need I remind you, democracy without free speech is not democracy. This was a direct breach, by the way, of the First Amendment. Before COVID, intelligence services colluded with big tech to have Trump suspended off Twitter. Yes, the same platform which hosted the Taliban and Ayatollah Deaf to Israel Khomeini, they thought the president crossed the line when he tweeted on Jan 6th, quote, remain peaceful, no violence, respect the law and our great men and women in blue. That's a quote. You may be thinking now that Trump is a populist. You are right. He didn't accept the 2020 elections and he should have. So should Hillary in 2016, so should Brussels, and so should Westminster in 2016, and so too should Congresswoman Pelosi, instead of saying the 2016 election was, quote, hijacked. Quote, hijacked.
Thank you.
What about the mainstream media? Let me read you some mainstream media headlines. The New Yorker, the day before the 2016 election. The case against democracy. The Washington Post, the day after the election. The problem with our government is democracy. The LA Times, June 2017. The British election is a reminder of the perils of too much democracy. Vox, June 2017. The two eminent political scientists say the problem with democracy is voters. New York Times, June 2017. The problem with participatory democracy is the participants. Mainstream media elites are part of a class who don't just disdain populism, they disdain the people. If the Democrats had put half their energy into delivering for the people, Trump wouldn't even have a chance in 2024. He shouldn't have a chance. You've had power for 4 years. From the fabricated Steele dossier to trying to take him off the ballot in both Maine and Colorado, the Democrats are the anti-Democrat party. All we need now is the Republicans to come out as the pro-monarchist party. Ladies and gentlemen, populism is not a threat to democracy, but I'll tell you what is. It's elites ordering social media to censor political opponents. It's police shutting down dissenters, be it anti-monarchists in this country or gender-critical voices here, or last week in Brussels, the National Conservative movement. I'll tell you what is a threat to democracy. It's Brussels, DC, Westminster, the mainstream media, big tech, big pharma, corporate collusion, and the Davos cronies. The threat to democracy comes from those who write off ordinary people as deplorable. The threat to democracy comes from those who smear working people as racists. The threat to democracy comes from those who write off working people as populists. And I'll say one last thing. This populist age can be brought to an end at the snap of a finger. All that needs to be done is for elites to start listening to, respecting, and, God forbid, working for ordinary people. Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Fetzer, that'll close it up.
Well, that was magnificent. Was that an Oxford Debating Society or elsewhere? I could not quite tell, but it was magnificent, his statement. And of course, when he alluded to the merge of big government with big business, saying those familiar with Italian history would understand. It was Mussolini who said that what's called fascism could equally be understood as corporatism because it's a merger of big government with big business. And I got to say, Gary, that was just as fine a statement as I've ever heard about the state of America today. Just a wonderful statement. I endorse every word. And what a perfect way to conclude our conversation of today.
All right. Just want to let y'all know that Nola is no longer a puppy. She's 35 pounds and growing, and she would like to say, see you next week. All right, Dr. Fetzer, thanks for being on the show.
You got it, Gary.
Okay.